The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. You do it inside the Beltway live on Election Day. Not everywhere, but it's Election Day in Virginia and New Jersey and Ohio and places across the United States electing local officials. Governors are on the ballot this morning in New Jersey and Virginia. Glenn Youngkin, the Republican nominee in Virginia, has run through the tape. Terry McAuliffe is close to conceding already. He held the worst rally of a long and terrible campaign, Terry McAuliffe did yesterday. Glenn Youngkin will be joining me an hour or two today, talking again about the same tropes he's used from the beginning. Cut number three, Terry McAuliffe yesterday.
He talks about critical race theory. Let's be clear, folks. Critical race theory has never been taught in the Commonwealth of Virginia. He says day one he's going to ban it. He's going to ban something that doesn't exist.
So Terry is yelling at people that they don't know what they're talking about when they see, feel, touch CRT everywhere, as with the closing of Thomas Jefferson High School in Northern Virginia on the basis of merit, moving towards a race-based selection criteria. That is critical race theory impacting schools. There are other more obvious examples throughout the Commonwealth, and people who know about it know about it. And they see it. They talk to teachers about it. They see their children indoctrinated, and they hate it. And Terry says, in fact, they are the racist problem. Cut number four, Terry McAuliffe yesterday.
What bothers me to my core is what this man is doing. He's dividing parents against parents, parents against school boards. He's using your children as political pawns in his campaign. It is a racist dog whistle. Folks, we are better than that.
Yes, we are.
We will not have that hatred here in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
You know, the attempt to define parents concerned with their children's education as racist has backfired on Terry McAuliffe. It did not motivate the black vote, and it certainly did motivate the Anglo vote. They are out there marching, as it did the Asian American vote and the Latino vote. There is a number of stories, but I got to finish first. Terry McAuliffe really putting his finger on it yesterday. Cut number five.
I promise you, we've got to diversify our teacher base here in Virginia. 50% of the students in Virginia schools, K-12, 50% are students of color. And yet 80% of the teachers are white. We all know what we have to do in a school to make everybody feel comfortable in school. So let's diversify. So here's what I'm going to do. We'll be the first state in America. If you'll teach for 5 years here in Virginia in a high-demand area, that'd be geographic or coursework, we will pay room, board, and tuition at any college, any university, any HBCU here in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
So let's go back and listen to that again. Because I think Terry McAuliffe just proposed using race-based hiring for teachers in the Commonwealth. Cut number five.
And I promise you, we've got to diversify our teacher base here in Virginia. 50% of the students in Virginia schools, K-12, 50% are students of color, and yet 80% of the teachers are white.
Stop right there. What does that mean? That means if you're a white teacher, Terry's going to push you aside. At least until we get to 50%, 50%. That, by the way, is an unconstitutional proposition, hiring by race. I think Terry McAuliffe has great trouble getting excitement among the African-American electorate, which is traditionally turned out for Joe Biden and Democrats. They don't like Terry. They're not turning out for him. They're staying home. It's cold in Virginia this morning, and they're just saying no. They also don't like hysteria. Here's a hysterical Terry McAuliffe yesterday, cut number six.
He doesn't believe the nurse working in a cancer ward should be required to be vaccinated. I happen to believe it. He doesn't believe, he says, day one, all masks come off and all vaccine requirements of teachers goes away. That will not happen with Governor Terry McAuliffe. Let me tell you this. We got to protect our students. Today, 1,142 of our children have been hospitalized with COVID. We just lost two 11-year-olds. Do you really want parents here sending your child to first grade where the teacher's not vaccinated and they're not wearing masks?
No!
Well, that's what you get.
1,100 students hospitalized with COVID. I don't know that that's true. I know, sadly, that there are 19 children in the ICUs of Virginia right now with COVID-related illnesses. I strongly encourage you to get vaccinated. Strongly encourage you to check with your doctor about your kids. If they don't have underlying conditions, they ought to get vaccinated. I'm sure Glenn Youngkin is pro-vaccine. However, no need to scare parents. There's no need to take a horrible situation and make it worse for those kids who are suffering and those families who are suffering by saying that they are not as unique as they are. Glenn Youngkin went up on the air yesterday with a new ad, cut number 7.
Terry McAuliffe wants to make this about a man who's not on the ballot in Virginia.
Terry McAuliffe's campaign in Virginia is all about Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Trump. Donald Trump. 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 Donald Trump. Donald Trump.
Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Trump. Trump.
Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Trump. Donald Trump. 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 Donald Trump. Trump.
Donald Trump. 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 Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Donald Trump. Trump. Donald Trump. 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 Donald Trump. He keeps invoking Trump. Donald Trump, Donald Trump, 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 Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Trump, Donald Trump, 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 Donald Trump, 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 Donald Trump, Trump, Donald Trump.
Have you made this race too much about Trump?
No. Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Trump, Donald Trump, 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 Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Trump, Donald Trump, 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 Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Trump,
Donald Trump, Donald Trump,
Trump, Trump, Donald Trump,
Donald Trump, Donald Trump,
Donald Trump, Trump, Trump.
Do you know, Dan, this isn't about Trump.
That was a Youngkin ad. Donald Trump has been on Terry McAuliffe's mind, not on the mind of Virginia voters. They care about getting their schools reopened, making sure that they are not masking elementary schools, making sure that the CRT is gone, that we get back to basics. And people forget the critical issue that powered Glenn Youngkin in the primary. Weeks before the primary, the Virginia Department of Education said, we will no longer offer accelerated math courses to any student before the 11th grade. That's insane. That's just stupid and ideological and based on equity, which is itself based on CRT, which is itself based on critical theory generally, which began at Harvard Law School in the late 70s and is now spread out to poison the water in wells across the United States as varied as Virginia's teaching mandate. Terry's got race on the mind, but the black population is just saying, nah, I don't think so. Some are going to come out and vote for Princess Blanding, who is a third party candidate who Terry bested in the Democratic primary. I believe it was Princess Blanding. And in any event, Terry is worn out. And now to the stories, The Washington Post. Virginia went big for Biden, but on eve of another pivotal election, many voters say Democrats have not delivered for them. Cleve Woodson writing that, a story by story about how Biden won Virginia by 10 points. Terry's likely to lose it tonight by a lot. I don't know if it'll get to double digits. Polls show Democrats want to replace Biden on the ballot in 2024, according to Aaron Blake in The Washington Post. No surprise that he's pulling down McAuliffe in Virginia. Donald Trump urged voters to turn out for Youngkin in Virginia election, governor election, according to The New York Post. The former president making a conference call with his supporters last night saying that they've got to get out and vote for Terry, for Glenn Youngkin. If Glenn Youngkin pulls off a win, he'll likely have Hispanic and Asian voters to thank, according to my fellow colleague at The Washington Post, Henry Olson. And I have an opinion column over on the front page of The Washington Post landing page. Count on Democrats to ignore the lessons of a Youngkin win. It begins. It will surprise no one that I think Glenn Youngkin is going to win Tuesday's vote in the Virginia governor's race. Former Governor Terry McAuliffe spent Sunday morning on Meet the Press, which was an appeal for help to the Beltway suburbs, where the Sunday shows matter far more than they do in Virginia Beach, Richmond, and Lynchburg, much less rural Virginia. While Youngkin was barnstorming to crowds of 1,000 people, McAuliffe made his pitch to sparsely attended rallies, according to the New York Times. I expect Youngkin to emerge the winner early on Tuesday evening. The question then becomes, what do congressional Democrats do in response? President Biden is fixated on spending massive amounts of federal money, despite his plunging favorability ratings. Will Democrats in Congress study a Youngkin win and respond, let's change course? The rest of my column, if you want to read it, is over at the Washington Post on the landing page on the right-hand column. My answer is no. They won't change a thing, just like in 2010 when Scott Brown beat Martha Coakley to fill the seat left vacant by the death of Senator Ted Kennedy, and it became 41 Republicans to 59 Democrats. Democrats did not stop for a moment in ruining American health care for millions. They put the pedal to the metal and drove Obamacare through, just like these Democrats will push through lots more trillions of dollars of wasteful spending. We will have more inflation, and come November of 2022, they will get wiped out, like Democrats did in November of 2010. They will lose 63 seats like they did in November 2010 because they will ignore Glenn Youngkin's win in Virginia. But first, let's get through that win, run through the tape. If you haven't gotten up to go and vote, get up and go vote. Call your friends, call your family. Turn around and head home. If you started home and you forgot to go by the library or the school, go and vote. Polls are open in Virginia. They'll be open until 7 o'clock tonight. I'm Hugh Hewitt.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com.
Welcome back, America. I think you all know that I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway and that all of America is focused on one thing. The college football playoff rankings come out tonight. It will be Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and Cincinnati. But David Drucker is probably paying attention to the Virginia gubernatorial election and maybe New Jersey. Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm great, Hugh. How are you?
Good. In Trump's shadow, in bookstores everywhere, you're doing well. I see it's doing well at Amazon, doing well everywhere. Does interest continue in the book?
It does. And the great thing about In Trump's Shadow is that it's one of those books, as it turns out, which I didn't quite think about in these terms. The further I get away from the published date, the closer I get to what the entire story is about, which is the future of the Republican Party and the impact Trump has had on the party, because we keep getting closer and closer by the day to 2024, and we keep getting into that future. So, so many great books about Trump's presidency, but every day we get a little further away from that and a little closer to where my book tries to sort of lay out a roadmap. So I'm pleased with the reaction in Trump's shadow, and I'm continuing to talk about it. I've learned, you probably know this, but talking about in Trump's shadow is a lot more fun than writing in Trump's shadow. Writing
100%.
Talking about it is great.
Yeah. So in Trump's shadow in bookstores everywhere, the former president made a conference call to Virginia supporters last night as Glenn Youngkin was crisscrossing the state, ending in Loudoun County late to a crowd of thousands. President Trump has not visited the state, and Glenn Youngkin has generally avoided talking about Donald Trump because he wants to talk about Virginia schools. It looks like it's working, David Drucker. What do you assess Virginia as this morning?
It really does. I mean, look, I rate the race a toss-up, but when you're in a Biden plus 10 state, just 1 year ago, in a state that hasn't elected a Republican to the governor's mansion since 2009, Glenn Youngkin is just in a really good position. I think he's in a good position because, for the most part, he's focused on the most important issue to Virginia voters about Virginia in this race. And Terry McAuliffe tried to make fetch happen by turning Glenn Youngkin into Donald Trump. And by the way, I think that strategy probably would have been just fine if President Trump had won re-election and was in the White House. But he's not. And then, of course, you know, on top of it, just Joe Biden, the president, isn't doing well. His approval numbers are down. But you know, we may be able to look back at this depending on the outcome, let's say if Youngkin wins, and say, well, there's really nothing Terry McAuliffe could have done given the president's low approval ratings and the drag from Capitol Hill, where the Democratic Congress can't get its, you know, act together with legislation. But the strategy not to focus on the biggest concern about which, as governor, he has the power to try and do something about, and rather turn Youngkin into Trump, it just wasn't a good strategy. And
no, because he's entitled.
Over,
yeah. He, Terry feels entitled to be governor,
yeah.
And it's not going to work. And because you aver to cut number one.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
That is the trapdoor which he pulled on himself, David Drucker.
Well, he did, but you have to credit Youngkin and his campaign with and I don't mean it this way, I was going to say, but with seizing on it.
It's yeah.
Recognizing
pounced.
The error. Yeah. They pounced. They seized. Pouncy the seizing cat, I like to say. They recognized that it was a problem, and they focused on it, and they wouldn't let go of it. You know, some campaigns are given such opportunities, and they don't do that. They continue talking about whatever it is they want to talk about, or they get, you know, they get distracted by their opponent making accusations about this, that, the other. I mean, they just drilled on this and drilled on it. And even when McAuliffe, you know, put out a TV ad saying he was taken out of context, then they took that ad and yep. made their own ad saying he wasn't. And it's just been a very strategically run campaign. Youngkin, for a first-time candidate, has been very disciplined. He's recognized the opportunity he has to run for governor and not for the U.S. Senate or anything else. And he's kept that campaign all about that. And look, and I think, you know, for Democrats, and look, both parties get caught up in fighting the last war until they finally realize it doesn't work anymore. You know, they wouldn't let go of a strategy that worked in 2018, worked, frankly, in 2017. But without Trump in the White House, when you're running everything in Washington, you don't win by demonizing the other side, because the other side, even if they were once scary, are a lot less scary to skeptical voters when they're not in power anymore.
And you don't win by stepping on the rake again and again. Here is Terry last night, cut number five.
And I promise you, we've got to diversify our teacher base here in Virginia. 50% of the students in Virginia schools, K-12, 50% are students of color, and yet 80% of the teachers are white. We all know what we have to do in a school to make everybody feel comfortable in school. So,
David Drucker, what do we have to do in a school to make everybody? Do we have to fire the white teachers? Because that's what it sounds like Terry McAuliffe stepping on another rake last night is advocating.
Right. So, look, you could look at this and say that he's trying to motivate non-white voters to show up and vote for him. But again, he's talking to a problem that a lot of Virginia voters have not been saying is a problem versus the problem they say they have, and that's in his problem.
Hunter, David Drucker, exactly on point, as is In Trump's Shadow. David Drucker's new book, available in bookstores now at Amazon.com. Come back for hour number two. Thank you, David. I will be talking with Glenn Youngkin, who I think is going to be the next governor of Virginia. My Washington Post column on that race is now at the landing page at WashingtonPost.com. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Come back. I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-1172.
Inside the Beltway on Election Day. It's Election Day in New Jersey, Election Day in Virginia, Election Day in Ohio. Hey, you folks in Loveland, Ohio, don't forget to vote for my friend and law school roommate Tim Butler up for re-election in Loveland. Nothing like a nationally syndicated radio host to tell you, Loveland voters, go vote for Tim Butler. I am joined by Byron York of the Washington Examiner and also Fox News. Good morning, Byron. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. Doing well. Thank you.
I have to play for you a
floundering Terry McAuliffe last night. Last night in Virginia, cut number five. I'd like you to translate this for us, Byron, when you hear it.
I promise you, we've got to diversify our teacher base here in Virginia. 50% of the students at Virginia schools, K-12, 50% are students of color, and yet 80% of the teachers are white. We all know what we have to do in a school to make everybody feel comfortable in school. So let's diversify. So here's what I'm going to do.
All right. The first all right. Byron York, what did he just say? Didn't he just say we're going to have to fire a bunch of white teachers and hire a bunch of teachers of color?
Sounded like that to me. I think he clearly said that Virginia has to reduce the number of white teachers in its public school system. I think there's no doubt about what he just said.
And to me, well, I read this a lot of ways. One, he has great trouble motivating the African-American reliable vote. They don't like him. He beat Princess Blanding in the primary. I believe she's on the ballot. I believe a lot of black progressives will go and vote for her. But number two, his teacher unions have negotiated a day off in many districts across Virginia. Do you think they're going to be enthusiastic about voting for him if they hear that?
No. And listen, this campaign is ending on such a down and negative note for Terry McAuliffe that it's hard not to conclude that he's kind of expecting to lose. And this is so obvious to everybody. I mean, did you see Politico's account of their two rallies last night?
No. Was it horrible again?
Well, it starts off, Terry McAuliffe wanted Glenn Youngkin and Donald Trump to campaign together so badly that when it didn't happen, McAuliffe simply invented a Youngkin-Trump event that didn't exist. Quote, guess how Glenn Youngkin is finishing his campaign? McAuliffe told a modest crowd outside of Fairfax Brewery Monday, he's doing an event with Donald Trump here in Virginia. This is Politico talking. That was a lie. Trump, well, there you go. Trump wasn't in Virginia. He never campaigned with Youngkin, though he made the case for Youngkin during a brief tele-rally, which lasted 6 minutes, by the way. 30 miles away at the Loudoun County Fairgrounds, a crowd several times the size of McAuliffe's was waiting for Youngkin to take the stage. You got a hint of why McAuliffe was desperate to manufacture the fake Trump event. Okay, now the coverage has turned.
Oh, you bet.
Against him. And so the two touchstones of fighting Youngkin have been to tie him to Trump and to accuse him of racism. And we've just covered both of them in this conversation. Yeah,
Byron, I love when the legacy media that has been telling us Terry McAuliffe has been a lock for months, then they realize he's getting smoked. Then they all begin to pass by his coffin in the ground, political coffin, and throw a little dirt on it, right? They don't actually pronounce him dead. They all just come by and throw a handful of dirt, you know, like an old crime family show.
And Terry is saying, I thought you were my friend.
I'm not dead. He's got a line from Monty Python. So when we go back at this, I also want to pay homage to Glenn Youngkin and his team. He's run a flawless campaign, disciplined, energetic message that I think began when the State Board of Education banished accelerated math before the 11th grade. Even before Glenn Youngkin was nominated, he jumped on that.
He has run as far as I can tell, a flawless campaign. And by the way, if you look at what he was talking about last night, he was talking about jobs. He was talking about the DMV. Of course, the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles, is a huge event, a huge issue in any state. The grocery tax, he talked about George W. Bush. He's creating, it seems to me, a post-Trump campaign in a state that what went for Biden by 10 points, 12 points last time, in a blue or purple state. This is something that Republicans are going to have to figure out how to do across the country, and this is what Youngkin has done.
Now, let me ask you something, Byron. I also think long COVID political is a subcategory of political phenomenon, and it's long COVID effects. And I believe in Virginia, people are really angry about what the schools did last year,
and about their return rules this year and their quarantine rules this year. I know that for a fact because I have three young grandchildren. Two of them are young elementary school students, and my mill spouse daughter cannot figure out the rules and can't get a straight answer from anyone. And she is not political, but she is angry at official Virginia education policy about kids with COVID or exposed to COVID. I can't imagine she's alone.
No, and this is just all negative against the schools and against somebody like McAuliffe who is advocating this. If you look at the last Washington Post poll of this race, which had McAuliffe very slightly ahead, it did ask what are the most important issues to you. And the most important issue was the economy. It was not COVID. I think that was an important poll that shows that many, many people in Virginia have taken the rather sensible advice of get your vaccine and live your life. And when the schools don't do that, when the schools come up with all of these restrictions and continue to act as if it's 2020, and so many people know that unionized teachers just don't seem to want to teach in person. It really hurts Terry McAuliffe.
You know, teaching fatigue is a real deal. I've been teaching con law for 25 years, but I took a year and a half off because you got to get energized again after 25 years. So I know a lot of the older teachers that are looking for their 30 and out are just, they're done with new technology. They don't want to do it. They're out of energy. But that doesn't do anything for the moms of Virginia. And Glenn Youngkin's been talking up charter schools a lot, Byron York. I think it's a playbook for every Republican.
Absolutely. I mean, education, look, who was the president? He did talk about a former Republican president quite a bit last night. And he talked about George W. Bush. So he wanted to connect with the sort of education president reputation of George W. Bush, who, you know, before September 11th got elected promising to be the education president. Events had different, you know, plans in mind for Bush and for the country. But it is an effective, it's one of the most effective issues you have. And I think when everybody looks over this race, people will say that moment that Terry McAuliffe said that he did not believe parents should be teaching or should be telling schools, you know, what to teach. I think that's going to be a key moment in McAuliffe's defeat.
Let's play that again. Cut one.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
Play it again, please. Cut one.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
One more time for the Steelers.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
I think I played it a couple of hundred times, Byron, because to me it is a summation of the left's proposition concerning children and parents in schools. I really do believe it's the gaffe, as Michael Kinsley said, is when you tell the truth, but you're not supposed to.
Yeah, the arrogance was really astonishing, and everybody got that. And the message was, don't question us. Message to parents was, don't question us. And, the sophistry involved in saying that, you know, critical race theory has never been taught. It's something that, you know, never got within 1,000 miles of Virginia. People understood what was being taught. And just it was all encapsulated in this arrogance of, we are the teachers. We are the government. Don't tell us what to do.
Very quickly, Byron, the transitive principle also applies. If saying you're concerned about CRT is a racist dog whistle, then those who are concerned about CRT are racist. And they're not. And they're mad at being called racist. Am I right about that?
Well, I think, yes. I think that that's been something that you've seen all along. And Democrats, look, Democrats are trying to figure out a post-Trump campaign style, just like Republicans are. And all they can think of is Trump racism, Trump racism. And when you have a candidate like Youngkin where it just doesn't apply, obviously they've been floundering.
Floundering, and I think going down big. I don't think it'll be a late night in Virginia, but get out and vote, Virginia. Get out and vote New Jersey and Ohio. Get out and vote in Loveland, Ohio. Get out and vote for Tim Butler. But Virginia, send a message. Send a very loud message to the Democrats. Stop. Stop it all. We might not have liked Donald Trump,
but we don't think we love your lefty insanity. Get out there and vote, America. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting.
Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined by Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy, former Allied Supreme Commander of NATO. Good morning, Admiral. How are you?
Doing well, and I'm pleased to announce I'm inside the Beltway, too, here in Washington for a couple of days.
Well, are you over at the offices of Carlyle Group today?
I will be there for much of the day, indeed.
Well, I wanted to ask you, since you know Glenn Youngkin well, you've been with the Carlyle Group for a number of years, Admiral. I know you don't do politics, you don't do R&D. Just tell us about Glenn.
He's tall, he's telegenic, he's a superb athlete. He was a good boss. He cares about people. He's smart. He understands the world, and he understands economics. I'm happy to see him run because he is someone who has a deep sense of service to others. I make no political comment here. I'm a registered independent, always have been. I'm not voting in Virginia, but I do know Glenn Youngkin. He is a good man.
That's basically what I wanted people to hear. I'll talk to him in the next segment. We'll catch up on that. I have gotten good reports about Youngkin enthusiasm from South Alexandria and North Alexandria, which is the heart of blue Democrat land. So I think it's going to be a good night for Glenn Youngkin. Admiral, I wanted to ask you about this Financial Times headline this morning. China tells citizens to stockpile food as COVID controls are tightened. Communist Party newspaper says no reason for alarm, but admits families are running low on supplies. China has warned families to store food and other essentials in case of emergencies as a small COVID-19 outbreak is reported. What do you make of that, Admiral?
I'd be worried if I were President Xi. I think that China has taken a very draconian approach to COVID from the very beginning, meaning if they have one case of COVID in a Disneyland-sized park, they will not only close the park, but they'll literally quarantine everyone who is in the park that day. And that goes beyond the science, at least as I understand it. It is the kind of tools that an authoritarian state will use to crack down. So I think it's entirely possible, because of the nature of this virus, it comes in these waves, that there will be a need for a significant crackdown. That's clearly what President Xi is signaling.
Now, Admiral, I want to bring you a second COVID story. There's another story out this morning that Russia has underreported COVID deaths, the excess death rate being 753,000 people over last year, but they hold their numbers down. Do you doubt the transparency of Russia, China, and every authoritarian regime when it comes to COVID fatality? And if so, why do they do that? It doesn't seem to me exactly a confidence-inspiring measure.
I have extreme doubt about the reporting from a majority of these harsh authoritarian regimes. Another one you didn't mention is North Korea, which at one point was saying it had zero COVID cases, which is literally impossible in today's world. It's a Orwellian. It's a common tool of an authoritarian state is to tell you that everything is just wonderful, hoping that you'll buy that and continue to support the goons that are in power. So this is clearly one more page out of that playbook for all these nations. And again, the reason is to maintain control over the people, to maintain control over their minds.
Now, Admiral, I'm going to take you to a place I assume you've been, the Philippines.
So many times.
In fact,
my first overseas liberty port when I was a young ensign was Subic Bay, a beautiful natural harbor that the U.S. Navy had a gorgeous port facility there for years. Yeah, I've been in and out of the Philippines too many times to count.
Yeah, my Marine buddies tell me that Subic Bay was kind of an unusual spot for sailors, that the shore patrol had busy duty.
Yeah, that would be a polite way to put it. It was right out of the movie The Sand Pebbles.
There you go. So today's Washington Post reports that decades-long communist rebel
leader killed in the Philippines. Jorge Madlos, whose nom de guerre is Ka Oris, has been a leading figure and spokesman for the communist fighters in the southern Philippines mountainous hinterland. You know, this will come as a shock to many people that they've been fighting since Magsaysay, basically, in the Philippines. What do you understand about that conflict, Admiral, and how it impacts on the United States?
It's much like the conflict that unfolded for 50 years just south of the United States in Colombia. It is a Marxist separatist group which seeks to overthrow a democratically elected government. And, you know, the Philippines has had problems with corruption over the years and dictators at times, obviously. But it's a vibrant democracy today. We may not always be in perfect alignment with the elected leaders, but it's a functioning, vibrant democracy. Freedom of the press is strong. And there is a communist group that has typically operated in the islands to the south. And as most folks will know, the Philippines are an enormous band, thousands of islands on the edge of the South China Sea, often in dispute, by the way, with China. And so to the south, these rebel groups have been operating, trying to pull these southern islands away. And ultimately, their goal was to overthrow the democratically elected governments in Manila to the north. Always been tension in the Philippine Islands between north and south, kind of similar to what happened in Colombia. The U.S. helped the Philippine military, helped the Philippine government. We've had special forces operating there for decades. And over time, the capabilities of those Filipino forces, the insurgent forces in the south, have been greatly diminished. I think the Philippines are on their way to a new election, probably a new leader. President Duterte has indicated he will not stand for another election. I think that's a good thing in the sense that it will give us a fresh leader to work with. And I think the future overall is quite bright for the Philippines.
So, Admiral, counterinsurgency in Colombia and Philippines appears to have worked over a long period of time, and most Americans don't know we were doing that. What's that tell us about the model for American-supported counterinsurgency efforts?
I think Colombia, in particular, is the model. And we called it, you know, with our usual imagination, we called it Plan Colombia. And it was a bipartisan effort under Democrat and Republican, because that is the key. To beat an insurgency, you have to have immense patience, decades of work often. And it's not sending the 82nd Airborne down there. It's not sending 150,000 troops like we did to Iraq or to Afghanistan. A better model is small numbers of U.S. troops, particularly special forces. And when I commanded that mission as Commander U.S. Southern Command, in charge of everything south of the United States, military to military, we never had more than 900 sailors in Colombia at any time. Huge nation, the size of Afghanistan, roughly the same population, 40 million. Yet we helped the people of Colombia overturn this Marxist insurgency known as the FARC by a steady application of counterinsurgency techniques, tactics, and procedures. We've done much the same thing in the Philippines. That's the right model for the U.S. when we want to help neighbors.
Last question, Admiral. With the success in the Philippines, is there a chance that we will return in force as a naval presence at Subic Bay? I know that it was during one of the convulsions in Filipino politics that the United States was tossed out. It seems to me always to have been a major defeat. I think it happened under President Clinton. I'm not sure. But should we be back there? Would the Filipinos welcome us?
It is a immensely powerful strategic position, and it was not only Subic Bay and the naval complex. QB Point was the naval airfield associated with it, but also Clark Air Force Base in the north near Manila, not so far apart, actually. And so that hub went away when we were invited to leave, which we did, of course. There has been sporadic discussion about reestablishing at least some kind of forward basing there. I think it is a topic well worth exploring with the new administration when it comes to power in the Philippines. Geography will have its way with us. This is the gateway to the South China Sea, the Philippine Islands.
I hope that Secretary of State Blinken is listening this morning, Admiral, because he's not. He's in Glasgow, unless they're listening in the middle of the day. But thank you, Admiral James Stavridis. Follow him on Twitter, at Stavridis. I think that's all it is. Good morning, and thank you, Admiral. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, inside the Beltway, live on this Tuesday morning, Election Day, in Virginia, New Jersey, Ohio, and many places around the United States. But the governor's race in Virginia has drawn the most attention nationally. The Republican nominee for governor, Glenn Youngkin, joins me now. Good morning, Glenn Youngkin. You ran through the tape last night in Loudoun County.
Well, Hugh, we had a big event last night in Loudoun County, but we had a great day yesterday. We had a great 10 days on our bus tour. We started in Roanoke yesterday morning with a giant crowd, and then in Richmond we had a big crowd, and then in Virginia Beach, which is where I grew up, we had a huge crowd, and then Loudoun County last night was overwhelming. I mean, I think everybody in Loudoun County was there. It was so much fun to see everybody come together and really try to bring this home for Virginia.
Now, last night, your opponent, Terry McAuliffe, was in a sparse crowd, according to the New York Times, and this is what he had to say that I want to get your comment on. Cut number five.
And I promise you, we've got to diversify our teacher base here in Virginia. 50% of the students at Virginia schools, K-12, 50% are students of color. And yet 80% of the teachers are white. We all know what we have to do in a school to make everybody feel comfortable in school. So let's diversify. So here's what I'm going to do.
So, Glenn Youngkin, I am not concerned about diversity in teachers. I am concerned with whether or not kids are learning. Has Terry McAuliffe just been tone deaf to this for the entire campaign?
Yeah, well, I think he's just tone deaf. Honestly, I don't limit it to this topic. I mean, at the end of the day, we've been talking about low taxes. We've been talking about our schools to educating our children to get ready for life so that they're taught how to think, not what to think, and they have high standards. We've been talking about investing in our law enforcement community so that we can make our community safe again and getting our job machine cranked up because it's totally stalled out. I mean, these are the issues that Virginians are most focused on. These are the kitchen table issues that every evening at dinner, and oh, by the way, when that midnight shift is finished and that kitchen table's for breakfast, Virginians are talking about. And I don't know what Terry McAuliffe's talking about in all candor. He's trying to find some page out of a playbook that he wrote for the Democratic Party on how to introduce race into this election, when the reality is this election is about Virginia's future, not our past. This is why we're going to sweep today. We've got to get everybody out to vote. Boy, the momentum is big, Hugh, and I just look forward to seeing Virginians come together in a way we haven't done in a long time.
The momentum is, in fact, palpable for those of us who live in Virginia, with Youngkin signs in the deep bluest parts of the state, including Old Town Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax County. So, Glenn Youngkin, down ticket. You want a lieutenant governor, an attorney general. You want a House of Delegates with a Republican majority if you're going to get anything done, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really going to happen. Winsome Sears, who's our lieutenant governor candidate, is awesome. Jason Meares, who's our attorney general candidate, is going to be an amazing attorney general. And I think we're going to get back 6, 7, 8 seats in our House of Delegates, and we're going to have a working majority. But, of course, the Senate's still going to be controlled by the Democrats because the Senate's not up. And so we're going to work across the aisle. I think when we focus on these most important issues of low taxes and the best jobs and the best schools and the safest communities, These are the issues that we can come together around. We've got a really clear agenda on day one we're going to go work on and get done and deliver results.
There's a lot of talent in Virginia, Governor. I've lived here off and on my whole life. And in Southwest Virginia and Northeast Virginia, in the Tidewater or out in the West Virginia border, there are a lot of very talented people who have made Virginia their home. How are you going to put together your team if you win tonight?
Well, we're going to have a team that represents all of Virginia. And I think one of the things we're going to do, Hugh, is we're going to shift power away from the marble halls in Richmond, and we're going to get out into Virginia. And so people always say to me, well, Glenn, can we have a meeting in Richmond? And I say, no, I'm going to see you. And so we're looking forward to spending time across Virginia and bringing all this talent that, you're exactly right, exists everywhere to go to work for all Virginians. And I was in Southwest Virginia on Sunday. We had a series of fabulous events, and yeah, there are a lot of incredibly talented folks, not only to help us serve Virginians, but to go to work and lead initiatives to make everybody's life in Southwest Virginia better.
Last question, Glenn Youngkin. The Wall Street Journal today reports that farewell offshoring, outsourcing, pandemic rewrites CEO playbook. American businesses are bringing factories back to the United States. They're going to look for a place to land. How do you make Virginia compete? I remember Rick Perry coming over to California with sticky fingers gloves and grabbing businesses. How do you do that for Virginia to get these jobs into the Commonwealth?
Well, we're going to make sure that everybody knows Virginia is open for business. We're going to protect our right to work status, which has been under threat recently, and it will not be when I'm serving Virginia as governor. But we're going to cut our regulations way back. The Virginia Code is 37,000 pages long. We're going to get a tax structure in place that makes it more affordable for Virginians to live here, so people want to work for these great companies. And we're going to go get them. And the reality is Virginia's forgotten how to compete. We've just kind of sat here and thought that people might just show up because we keep receiving these CNBC rankings. Well, rankings don't do anything for you. You got to go get it. And so one of the things I've done in 30 years is I know how to build business and create jobs, and I know how to go get business. And so this is where we're going to go. And all those other governors that I so look forward to having a healthy competition with across the nation, get ready because Virginians awake again.
Clear eyes, clean heart, Glenn Youngkin, congratulations on a great campaign, and to Mrs. Youngkin and the kids who have been there every step of the way with you. Good luck today. I know you'll be working the polls throughout the state throughout Election Day. Polls are open in Virginia. They will stay open until 7 p.m. tonight. So get out and vote, Virginia. I'm Hugh Hewitt from the Beltway. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. Special welcome to WZFC, News Talk 1400, first in the Valley, in the Shenandoah Valley in Winchester, serving Frederick and Clark County. Get out and vote. Special good morning to Super Talk, WFHG 92.9 in Bristol, Virginia. On the southern border, get out and vote. You folks in Virginia Beach and in Norfolk, get out and vote. And, of course, on AM 970, The Answer, and for Northern Virginia, get out and vote. I'm joined by United States Senator Tom Cotton. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Hugh. It's good to be on with you, and I'm glad that you have a far and deep reach into the Old Dominion, and I add my voice to your encouragement to all Virginians to get out today and vote for Glenn Youngkin if you're tired with Virginia not being a competitive state with its neighbors and higher taxes and your kids being indoctrinated, hate America, and you want to send a message to Joe Biden and Democrats in the Congress to stop their radical socialist agenda.
Senator Cotton, you've gone through two House generals, two Senate generals, election night. You've had primary election as well. Is Election Day the longest day for a candidate?
There's not much left for a candidate to do on Election Day, Hugh. I had the benefit that I planned to win, and all my races were called pretty much immediately after the closing
bell. That's nice.
But no, on my election days in the past, I've gone out and I've thanked my volunteers. I've gone and call center to get out the vote operation to rally the troops, because although a candidate can't do all that much more persuading on Election Day, the massive operation that is a statewide campaign has a lot to do in terms of making sure that people are going to vote, resolving any controversies with the polls. So there's thousands and thousands of hardworking Republicans, from Republican women to young Republicans, teenage Republicans, who are rolling up their sleeves today, try to make sure that Glenn Youngkin and the entire Republican ticket wins. And we owe them a special thanks. I know that Glenn Youngkin is going to be out thanking them today, even if the campaigning to persuade voters is more or less done at this point.
Well, last night on Election Eve, Terry McAuliffe managed to contribute to the case against him, saying this, cut number five, Senator Cotton.
And I promise you, we've got to diversify our teacher base here in Virginia. 50% of the students at Virginia schools, K-12, 50% are students of color, and yet 80% of the teachers are white. We all know what we have to do in a school to make everybody feel comfortable in school. So,
all right, Senator Cotton, you went to Harvard Law School. I'm not sure they teach constitutional law there, but they did at Michigan, and I've been teaching it for 20. That's unconstitutional hiring based on race. It's just blatantly unconstitutional.
Well, and you could tell that it got rousing applause from the tens and tens of people who have been showing up to Terry McAuliffe rallies. I would further say to you, here's what we can do to make kids feel comfortable in school. We can stand up to far left woke superintendents and school boards who are concealing rapes that occur in bathrooms because it interferes with their transgendered policies during Pride Month, and then who will transfer the perpetrator to another school where he can rape another girl. We can make sure that schools are teaching our students American history and Virginian history teaching it straight, teaching it all, but not teaching our children to hate America, not teaching them to see each other first and foremost as a representative of the race that their skin color reflects. Those are the things that we can make, that we can do to help our kids feel comfortable and to learn in schools, as opposed to unconstitutional hiring practices.
Now, Senator Cotton, yesterday your colleague Joe Manchin got up and threw down on the House Democrats. I like to point out to the Steelers fans, West Virginia is next to Virginia. So I think he sees what's going on in Virginia and the repudiation of Terry McAuliffe and Joe Biden and says, you know, that's probably going to happen in West Virginia as well. Were you shocked or pleasantly surprised by Senator Manchin sit down and shut up to the House Democrats yesterday?
Yeah, I thought that Senator Manchin put it very well yesterday when he said he's not going to vote for a bill that will set the country back, that is full of gimmick and smoke and mirrors budgeting, which the Democrats openly admit this bill is. They openly admit that their so-called revenue raisers won't actually raise that much revenue, or that they are artificially ending programs after 1, 2, 3, or 6 years, hoping that those programs will become entrenched and have to be extended. So Joe Manchin is just calling a spade and saying he's not going to vote for such a bill. He's certainly not going to be rushed into voting for a bill by a bunch of far-left backbenchers in the House of Representatives.
So those far-left backbenchers in the House of Representatives hold in their hands the infrastructure bill. What do you expect the far-left backbenchers to do when Nancy Pelosi is yelling at them?
Well, Hugh, I thought it's interesting that not just Joe Manchin was speaking out publicly yesterday about the House voting on that infrastructure bill, but some of those far-left backbenchers are now saying, no, they want to vote too. They're ready to vote. And I think that it's not just Joe Manchin who recognizes the massive repudiation that's coming tonight in Virginia, but all those far-left backbenchers. And they don't want to be blamed tomorrow morning for having blocked votes on this legislation. So they're all, everyone from Joe Manchin to the squad is rushing to deflect the blame for the massive drubbing that Democrats are about to take in Virginia.
Well, you know, that is to me interesting, Senator. I have a column up at the Washington Post landing page. It says Democrats got a message in 2010 when Scott Brown beat Martha Coakley to fill the seat of the late Ted Kennedy, and they didn't listen. They simply went ahead and passed Obamacare anywhere, and they got wiped out in 2010. They lost 63 House seats. Do you expect them to be tone deaf to whatever the message that Virginia sends tonight is?
Hugh, mark it down. I'm not Nostradamus. I just know how Democrats behave, that after tonight, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden and the Ocasio-Cortezes and Bernie Sanders of the world are going to blame the defeat in Virginia on lack of Democratic turnout, lack of Democratic enthusiasm, and double down on their reckless taxing and spending bill. They have to push forward. They have to pass it. It has to be even bigger and bolder, as Chuck Schumer always says. Now, they may be saying that in public, but something tells me that all those vulnerable Democrats in the House, people like Elaine Luria and Abigail Spanberger in Virginia, are not going to be buying what those Democrats are selling, because they know that this massive repudiation in Virginia tonight will spell doom for their party if they proceed.
You know, Senator, I'm not even sure that the moderates can afford to vote for an infrastructure bill. With inflation on the prowl and rising, if they pump $1 trillion into infrastructure, as is proposed in the infrastructure bill, which I originally supported, but I also pay attention to inflationary rates, those moderate Democrats are going to get blamed for inflation if they vote for this.
Yeah, and remember, Hugh, they're calling it the infrastructure bill, and there are some good provisions in that bill that would support better roads, for instance, but there's a lot in that bill that goes to wasteful, pie-in-the-sky, green energy projects trying to get the camel's nose under the tent of the Green New Deal and basically give the Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm, a slush fund to go along with John Kerry's ambition to remake our energy economy at a time when Americans are paying $4 at the pump and home heating rates for this winter are going to go through the roof. So there is a lot of peril for the Democrats if they rush headlong into not just their reckless tax and spending bill, but also an infrastructure bill that spends as much on things besides roads and highways as it does on those roads and highways.
So, Senator, I want to switch to foreign affairs now and your service on the Armed Services Committee and Intel Committee. Very slowly, reluctantly, Team Biden has let us know that there are 450-plus American citizens still in Afghanistan. We don't have a number for LPRs. We don't have a number for visa-eligible Afghans who assisted the American military in their mission there. Do you believe they will ever tell us the truth, and do you believe that those American citizens have been abandoned?
Of course they've been abandoned, Hugh. After Joe Biden promised throughout the summer that he would not abandon them, and every one of his mouthpieces went out and assured the American people that, oh, there are fewer than 100 American citizens left, and most of them don't want to leave anyway. And now they're coming back to us and telling them it's 4 or 5 times that much. I don't know why anyone would believe them in their current estimates, having lied to us back in August and September. And, of course, feckless and humiliating retreat from Afghanistan has simply emboldened our adversaries to stick a thumb in Uncle Sam's eye. I mean, Xi Jinping wouldn't even appear on video at the climate change conference in Scotland. Now, most Americans don't care about that, and frankly, I don't either, Hugh. But Xi Jinping knows what a huge priority that is for Joe Biden. So that is a direct rebuke to President Biden. Or look at Vladimir Putin, who's massively building up troops on the border of Ukraine, Hugh. This could be a dangerous flashpoint in the weeks ahead. Do you think Vladimir Putin would be doing that if Joe Biden hadn't proved so hapless in Afghanistan? I very much doubt it.
Hapless is the word. It's a hapless presidency. He fell asleep at COP26 yesterday. Kelly O'Donnell reported on MSNBC. What's that send to the world as a message, Senator Cotton?
Well, it probably signals how boring the topic is in Glasgow and how little they're going to get done. If anything, they're going to contribute to global warming with all the hot air coming out of the gas bags that are gathered in Scotland.
So in terms of, though, what it projects in terms of the frailty of the president is frail. Everybody sees that. Does that embolden Putin? Does it embolden Xi vis-a-vis Taiwan to know that we have an isolationist, weak and physically inert president?
Yeah, well, Hugh, Joe Biden has been in Washington for 50 years, and he's wanted to be president that whole time. And for 50 years, no one in Washington thought that Joe Biden was up to that job, and he didn't magically get up to the job when he turned 78, when he wasn't up to it, when he was in his 40s or in his 60s. And I think that's obvious for everyone.
He turned 79 this month. Do you have any hopes that there's going to be any course correction after Virginia votes tonight?
You mark it down. Joe Biden and all the senior Democrats will say how the Virginia results just go to show that they need to double down and accelerate and expand their reckless tax and spending bill. I promise you that will be their message tomorrow, because what else can they say? They're not going to have a course correction and repudiate where they've been for 8 months. But you do have enough vulnerable Democrats in the House that I expect they'll have to pump the brakes at least for a while.
I hope that there are 5 of them who say no mas, no mas. Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, thank you for joining me on Election Day in Virginia. Hey, Virginia, get out and vote. This is why Terry McAuliffe is losing cut number one.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
Again, cut number one.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
One last time.
I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach.
Not only should parents shut up and sit down, but white teachers in Virginia are going to be purged under the logic laid out by Terry McAuliffe last night, cut number 5.
And I promise you, we've got to diversify our teacher base here in Virginia. 50% of the students at Virginia schools, K-12, 50% are students of color, and yet 80% of the teachers are white. We all know what we have to do in a school to make
what we have to do, Terry thinks, is fire the white teachers. Cut number 4, Terry, at the same rally yesterday.
What bothers me to my core is what this man is doing. He's dividing parents against parents, parents against school boards. He's using your children as political pawns in his campaign. It is a racist dog whistle. Folks, we are...
You know, I stop it. He got stuck on stupid with the racist dog whistle stuff. And that calls every voter for Glenn Youngkin a racist, and people are making up their minds and are concerned about education racist. That's a surefire way to blow up. You will never hear racist dog whistle associated with CRT again after the results tonight. Get out and vote in Virginia. Get out and vote in New Jersey. You don't have to have a Democratic governor there. Get out and vote in Ohio, like Tim Butler. Get out and vote, and then come back and listen to Glenn Youngkin next on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Let me remind you, ReliefFactor.com. If you're working the polls today in Virginia, you should have had your ReliefFactor.com. That means you, Penny and Jerry. You should have had your ReliefFactor.com already. I carry it in Kirkman, Resveratrol, and Omega. If you're standing up or sitting down at a poll, watching job, and there are at least 2 Youngkin volunteers at every poll in Virginia, if there's any funny business, it will be reported. It will be investigated. You don't have to worry about that. Get out and vote. I know it's raining in a lot of places, so you may not walk. But if you do walk or you do any exercise today, Remember, relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com. 1995 gets you relief. I use it every day. I take it in the first hour. I remind you in hours two and three. Don't get left behind. Get relieffactor.com. And then come back here. Glenn Youngkin is next. The next governor of Virginia joins me this morning. Stay tuned.
Portions of the Hugh Hewitt Show brought to you by Sierra Pacific Mortgage. For more info, call 888-888-1172.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.